What is up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another episode of Bison Report Radio. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uggleman. Joining me today in the home studio is Blake the intern. Blake, man, how are you?
Good again. I mean, there's so much going on, isn't there, right now?
It is. We've had jam-packed episodes coming into the week. Last week, obviously, had signing day, had a number of big-time things. A couple weeks ago, the rumors and innuendo about the FBS. It has been nary a dull day here on the Bison Report Radio podcast, brought to you by the good folks over at Gateway Chevrolet. Got to say that because I finally got a new truck. I've been talking about it on the radio, been talking about it on the show. Somebody, you know, over from Gateway needed a hauler, and they finally did. Got another white pickup, but this time I got the EV. Super excited about it. They treated me super well, as they always do, and love the folks over at Gateway Chevrolet. A little bit of, I guess, some apologies. Probably going to sick Blake the intern on trying to get this show. You probably didn't hear an intro because we're that running on smoke here a little bit. We're running out of gas. I was in Arizona for quote-unquote real business. If you guys read the paper or have read the paper, you know what that's about. Got a little golf, indoor golf performance center coming to you in the Fargo-Moorhead area. Was on some business in the Scottsdale area. Didn't get back till Thursday night. Can't record the pod till Friday. Then NDSU goes and plays Wisconsin Stout in the middle of the day. Crazy stuff. So we're recording late Friday, trying to get out to you before the Bison Report show, kicking off 6 hours of pregame coverage tomorrow on Bison 1660. Blake, you missed the most ridiculous thing. I don't know if you knew this about the Midday Madness or whatever the heck they called it. Like seven elementary schools were on a field trip.
Oh, yeah. I saw a picture.
It was bananas, especially when Stout was shooting free throws. It was the most high-pitched, just nonsense you've ever heard or seen in your life. My kids were going crazy. But what a cool thing. I mean, it'd be fun. I know it'd almost be, like, wasteful, right? It'd be fun to get a D1 in there, you know, for that.
Yeah, so, you know, when the game ends, they're shooting pressure free throws into...
Yeah, just children screaming, yeah. Like, it would have been cool if it was even just, like, Western Michigan at noon in front of 1,200 8-year-olds, you know what I mean? But it was a very cool environment nonetheless, a good idea when you have... you know, a less than exciting non-conference situation like getting another home game by hosting Wisconsin Stout. And I get it, man. It's hard. And it ain't going to get any easier for the Bison after what they've done in the road non-conference this year. We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's hit the news. UND, the school up north, hiring a new football coach, Eric Schmidt, played there, was on their only national championship team ever in 2001. Can't relate, of course, but... on their only national championship team, the Division II champs in 2001. Mandan native. You want to talk about can't relate. I was just talking about the golf business that we're putting together. Our main supplier for our key components in that building is Full Swing out of Carlsbad, California. It's a suburb of San Diego. I've been out there to meet with those guys twice. I'm going to tell you right now. There is nothing in this world that you could do to get me to take a pay cut to move from San Diego to Grand Forks. It boggles the mind. I got nothing for you, Blake the intern.
Did you see in his, and I thought this was the right hire, like when...
Oh, for what that place has to offer right now? Getting a G5 coordinator, yeah, is a miracle.
But when... So the Grand Forks Herald got an open record of his contract.
Yeah.
There is some condition or whatever in there that he gets an incentive for beating the Dakota schools. It's like $10,000, I think, for beating the Dakota schools.
Okay.
And then, like, his interviews, it's... They're changing... I don't know if you heard this. They're changing their defense.
4-2-5.
Yeah.
I've been a 4-2-5 merchant at NDSU. Nobody's listened yet, but...
Eric Schmidt's catching on.
Good for Eric Schmidt, man. That's all I have to say about that for now. I just, like I said, to leave San Diego, California, I think his wife's from Crookston.
Okay.
I just, buddy, I don't know. But I get it. It's home. It's your alma mater. Yeah. I get it all. I understand it all. Wiz, Cole Wisniewski headed to Texas Tech. Industry source texted me, loads of money was the text that I got. I think that that was not necessarily that Cole Wisniewski received loads of money, but that Texas Tech's NIL coffers are hilariously full. Like, you don't understand Texas football money. It's basically what I was led to believe. Like last year, I think we had confirmed Notre Dame was involved. We had confirmed Wisconsin was involved. I happen to know that the University of Minnesota kicked the tires on Cole Wisniewski. I happen to know that the University of Washington kicked the tires on Cole Wisniewski. He's going to be a Texas Tech Raider. And like I said, loads of money was the text that I got. I was like, okay, cool. FCS championship game on its way to Nashville. Of course, I believe Vanderbilt Stadium. I think the Bison are playing Tennessee State at the Titans Stadium next year.
I believe so,
yeah. But hoping, of course, if they remain, and it unfortunately looks like they will, if they remain in FCS, they're looking to make two trips to Nashville next year for the national championship game. To be there for 2 years while FC Dallas's stadium or Toyota Stadium or Pizza Hut Park or whatever in the world they're calling it these days down in Frisco is renovated. I don't know if there's any guarantee that it's moving back to Frisco. If NDSU is still FCS at that time, there's going to be some very sad people. I'll just put it to you that way.
Yeah.
And in that, you're waiting on Northern Illinois. UC Davis filling out the non-football stuff for the Mountain West. Chose to remain Big Sky only in football. I'm guessing that has to do 63 scholarships instead of 105. Sure. I don't think UC Davis has the alumni base to fund 105 football scholarships. NDSU certainly does, but still waiting on that call right now. All reports leading to waiting on NIU. If Northern Illinois wants to stay in the MAC, I think that opens things up for the Bison. If Northern Illinois chooses to leave the MAC, and if the MAC will allow them to stay in the conference in all other sports, which they may not, if NIU takes a football-only offer to the Mountain West for at least this round of realignment, I think it's curtains for the Bison. They're going to have to figure out another path.
Could there be a way where they go football only, NIU I'm saying, and their other sports join a different league?
Potentially, but I mean that's
not ideal.
And none of it affects the Bison really. You're hoping, because I think they're cool with nine teams in the league, because nine teams in the league gives you an eight opponent schedule. Everybody plays everybody once.
Yeah.
That's and everybody gets a bye. It's not perfect. I mean, you want like 10 or 12 teams in your league, but nine works, and that would be the ninth team. Hoops. They beat Butler, man. And I know that happened Tuesday.
Yep.
And we're here on a Friday, and it felt definitely emergency pod worthy. We just didn't have the technology. We didn't have the ability to do it. As I mentioned, I was down in Scottsdale. Blake the intern was up here. Nate was in Wisconsin. It didn't work, but we'll get back. I think we need to set the stage for how important this is. I talked to Coach about this. You go back to my conversation with Dave at the beginning of the year. And I said, it's not a blank or a blank state. This isn't Iowa. It's not Iowa State. It's not Texas. It's not, you know, whatever. It's not like that brand, and I don't know if people will get it. Guys, let me impress upon you. Butler plays in the conference that the defending two-time national champion plays in. The Big East is a Power 5 basketball conference. Super Power 5. Like, not, oh, yeah, they're just kind of over. No. Like, dogs. Creighton, dogs. UConn, yeah. Dogs. There's real bad dogs. Xavier, dogs, absolutely. Providence, on the come up.
Right.
Georgetown, multiple-time national. Like, the Big East is no joke. In fact, I don't even think I would rank them fifth out of the quote-unquote Power Five. I don't think I would. Getting past that, I got a text message. Well, this isn't Brad Stevens Butler. Okay. They don't have one of the greatest college coaches of all time, even though he doesn't have a title. I view him that way. I think if he would have stuck around, took a bigger job, certainly could have won a national title, but chose to do the Celtics thing, and that's all fine. That was the Missouri Valley. Brad Stevens did that out of the Missouri Valley. And then Butler became, in the, you know, into the new Big East, massively different revenue sharing. Their men's basketball budget is up to $5.85 million. I'm going to tell you, NDSU's is not that. Hinkle Fieldhouse, the whole thing, like, I'm not saying necessarily beating Butler now would have been better than beating Brad Stevens, but at the time they were a Missouri Valley school. It would have been like Northern Iowa, right? Yeah. Would have been like Illinois State, Indiana State, whatever, like that league. They're in the big freaking East. This, make no mistake, Saul beating Notre Dame, Tim beating Marquette in Wisconsin, Dave beating Butler, it's the same thing. It is a Power Four conference win. Non-conference win, excuse me, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
So I just hope people, it's impressed upon people how huge this was.
You think this is Dave's biggest non-conference win?
100%. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
I don't even know what would even come close.
Santa Clara?
This year?
This year. Smacking the hell out of ETSU without Rocky Cruiser was one of the wilder basketball games I've ever been at. Shout out to Vinny Shaheed. You could look at some other ones, but, you know, I mean, had a chance to beat Kansas. Didn't. Right? Had a chance in some of those now I was in an empty fog because of COVID, but, like,
sure. Yeah.
I mean, they had a chance in some of those high major games, and it just never worked out. This is high major as high major gets, man. And yes, this was David's biggest, Coach Richmond's biggest thing. Shout out to Reading Glasses, Dave. I'm going to try and get those reading glasses on the show tomorrow. Okay, I would say Jakari White had the best half in the history of NDSU basketball against a high major. I will listen to you if you want to talk to me about Ben Woodside's 21 in the second half of the first NCAA tournament game against KU. But Jakari was absolutely nuclear in the first half. And some of them were like leaning, contested nastiness from downtown.
He wasn't even touching the rim on the
They were splashing.
It wasn't one of the threes, but at the end of the half, he hit like that turnaround fade.
From the baseline?
From the baseline. I'm like, oh, man.
And the floater, the floater from the key, yeah.
And then he just cooked McCaffrey on the baseline once, and then...
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit heading into the season. All due respect to Bowden Scunberg and Andrew Morgan, but it was like, last year, who's the man? Who's the man? No, you could talk to me about Jackson Mooney, but I mean, like, there's 5 seconds on the shot clock. Who do we throw it to because we're panicked and we need a bucket? His name is Jakari White. He can create his own shot. He can hit mid-range. He's got floater game. He's been better at the rim this year. And apparently, he can hit leaning threes off of a screen and roll. So, you know, traditionally, I think in college basketball, the guy is a guard. All due respect to Jackson Mooney, who we will get to. But they have that dude. That dude is Jakari White.
Yeah, he can create.
He can.
Like, he is so lengthy. Like, just watching, like, in person, the way he's able to get places just off of a couple steps. Long, athletic, and touch. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Would use?
Yeah.
For that, those floaters?
Floater game.
He's got kind of a... His jumper is a little wonky. Like, if I had never seen him shoot before, and I'm like, it went in. Okay.
What if I just call him Orlando Magic? Do you like that?
You just call Jakari Orlando
Magic. Orlando Magic. Not the Orlando Magic, but that's just his nickname, is Orlando Magic.
I can get on that.
I'm workshopping. Mooney was really steadily awesome. Like, if it wasn't Jakari, it was Mooney. And Butler's interesting. Butler is like everything that Coach Richmond, I think, has ever wanted. It just seemed like the whole team was 6'7" and thick.
Yes.
Like, the whole team was 6'7" and thick, so they could just guard whatever position. But that got them into a little bit of who is guarding Mooney. And they didn't really have answers. Like, his low post game was almost as effective as his pick and pop game. And I love that Butler team is good. Like, they've got dudes. I think the one guard is like 6'3", but everybody else seems to be 6'7", and just built like a refrigerator. But they had trouble with Mooney's size, and it led to post-up opportunities, and then we'll talk about it later, but just onions
Yeah.
For on those threes.
I thought his So they ran a little bit of that weak side pick and roll, Watkins, Mooney.
Yeah.
It would kind of clear everybody to the one side, and they couldn't guard it for a while.
Yeah.
Like, you take Watkins, you leave Mooney at the top of the key, bang. Okay? You give it to Mooney on the block, you're not stopping him. He's, like you said, his size was just a problem.
And Jakari's ability to hit threes on not catch and shoot has really gotten us to a point that is impressive, because that creates screen and roll opportunities for Jakari and Mooney that are electric, because Jakari can finish at the rim. Jakari can hit threes off the dribble. And, of course, you have short roll opportunities and pick and pop opportunities for Mooney. He's as good in the pick in the screen game as anybody they've had, because he's just so versatile. And they've had bigs that can shoot, bigs that can finish at the rim. But Mooney, I think, no disrespect to Rocky Cruiser intended, but I think he might be just the most gifted offensive one that they have had. Little guest appearance by Berkeley Uglum there, no big deal. But yeah, Jackson Mooney, so they get 21 at half. And you're looking at, like, you know, win probability statistics. Just by basketball, it's almost impossible is the wrong word. It's very difficult to come back from 21 and a half if the other team is trying at all. 21's a lot of points. But man, we've seen the Samford game. We've seen the Bakersfield game. Even, like, games they've won, big time games. Santa Clara was a comeback.
Weber State.
Yeah.
Oof. It's like Groundhog Day.
It is. Butler storms back. I've got a theory there, and I want to ask Coach about it. Plus, I keep bringing my kids to the game, so I never get to ask him anything after the game. It's all you anyway. I wonder, I've heard him say this at practice. Layups, free throws, and threes. He is the, like, nerd chart shaman right now. Like, reading glasses Dave is analytics Dave, and I love it. Just embracing the new wave of basketball. It's NBA thinking. I'm not being facetious at all. I love it. I wonder, when they're so efficient and so effective from three, is it different when you're protecting a lead? Because when you're building your lead and you're just running your stuff, it's like, take the first open three. That's our offense. When you're up 16 in the second half, it's almost like, well, your best possession, I'll put it to you this way. If I'm a coach, if I'm up 16 and there's 12 minutes left in the second half, I'm telling you, I want a post look or a layup with less than 5 seconds to go on the shot clock. I want you to take 25 seconds, and then I want you to make a layup, or I want you to make a short hook, whatever, doesn't matter. Something in that neck of the woods. I want a close look at the rim after you've burned 25 seconds off the clock. But that's so far out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I will say too, like, turning the ball over against the press is also a problem. Not that it was this game, no. But it's how they lost against Samford.
Yeah, the point guard situation seems to have gotten a little bit better, I think, but I don't know if, can you ask Federson and Mooney to just bang dudes on the block for 10 straight minutes?
I don't know that you can, and I'm not even saying that that's 100% the issue, the problem, what they're even getting into, but I do think that, like, jack up the first open three you see is just not normal basketball game theory, protecting a double-digit lead late in games. And maybe it gets them out of their funk. And maybe you just keep driving the lead and driving the lead and driving the lead. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the best practice is. But it is it's enough to drive a guy nuts just to see kind of, like you said, Groundhog Day. It happens over and over and over again. But, man, the most impressive part of the game to me was after Butler hits that three to go up five. Because I'm checking Twitter. I'm looking at, like, NDSU's mentions, fire Richmond, like, the, like, oh, this is the Richmond special, Bob. And it's never a player's fault. And I'm okay with that, I guess, to a point. But, like, everything is always Dave's fault when it goes wrong. And I think you got to wear that a little bit. Always the players' fault when it goes good. Always the coaches' fault when it goes bad. But the vibes could not have been worse. My group chats were all negative. Like, just to be in that situation, I think it's tough, obviously. And you have to gut check at such a high level to not let that crowd drown you out. I mean, I don't know. I'll check really quick. This is great podcasting. I want to look at the win probability, because obviously you're 14 and a half point underdogs. So in general, Butler's going to start with a way higher win probability than you. So Butler, with when they hit that three to go up, Jackson Mone misses a layup with 2 minutes and 43 seconds left, and Butler had an 88% chance to win the game. Goodness. By the way, NDSU, Jackson Mone, so get this. Mason Miller hits a three to put the Bison up 23, 50 to 27 with 17 minutes left. Jackson Mone gets a steal. It's NDSU's ball. NDSU has the ball and a 23-point lead with 17 minutes left. Their win probability was 98.2. And it swung all the way to Butler having an 88% chance of winning the game.
Holy.
And then two back-to-back threes, Mone, gut check, onions. I mean, that's almost a demon exercise in itself, because, yes, they have staved off one of those crazy comebacks before, but you lose the Samford game that way. You lose the Bakersfield game that way. You go into Hinkle Fieldhouse. You've got Ryan Nelson there. You know that, like, they're filming. They're filming Dave in the huddle. They're filming Dave in the pregame. They're filming the film room session on Monday. I don't know if you saw, like, the recap that they posted. They were making a big deal of this game. Obviously, the Bison coaches felt pretty comfortable with everything. It felt like this could be something. And you've given that all the way back to Butler. The crowd's going nuts. And you just bang two threes right in their face.
Cojones.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should have Bill on the call. Raftery.
Yes.
Onions!
Onions indeed. But, dude, they're a bucket away from sweeping Santa Clara, Samford, and Butler on the road.
I don't know. We were just talking about that. They could be, should be 11-2.
Yeah. And they got a chance, man. They've got a chance.
I don't know right now if you're looking at favorites again, if you're kind of readjusting your preseason.
UMKC's probably still good. USD's got a nice looking record.
Yeah.
South Dakota State's interesting always.
Yeah.
Just because Hendo's good. Clough has played well. When they don't have Clough, they look lost.
Yeah. And they are young without him.
Yep.
A lot of true freshmen playing. Starting.
Yep. But yeah, really exciting. Once again, the Bison Report Radio Podcast brought to you by the good folks over at Gateway Chevrolet. Getting a lot of the 2025 models in as they're looking to close out the 2024s. Massive, massive discounts on Chevy Silverados. They're also really trying to move inventory on Tahoes and Suburbans. Check them out at gatewayfargo.com or go visit them on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo. Mercer.
The Bears.
The Mercer Bears. Hard to, you know, it's funny. It's hard to get that excited, but that was like Polisek's point. And we can talk about wanting to go FBS. We can talk about, you know, how watered down this whole thing feels, where it is Mercer in the quarters, right? And it's like, well, it's going to be the Dakota schools in Montana State in the Final Four. And it's like, what else is there in the FCS right now? You know, Coastal Carolina's gone. Sam Houston State's gone. James Madison is gone. Georgia Southern is gone. Like, these proud programs are gone. Yet, you're down 17-3 to Abilene Christian,
right?
Because that game wasn't big enough for you. And I get that. I don't think it's going to be a problem again, right? Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a problem again. But they got to get playing better football, because one way or another, I think the Rabbits are coming to town. So they got to get playing better football. Mercer, tailback Dwayne McGee, I think, makes them go. They're a run-heavy team. They're a run-the-ball, stop-the-run. They're, to a degree, they're kind of like looking in the mirror for North Dakota State, which, hey, man, last week's run defense, you have up a 90-yard touchdown on the ground. But if you're Mercer and you're looking for hope, that's probably where you're looking, right, is running the football.
Yeah, and you get the conference offensive player of the year, right, to do, like you meant, McGee.
Yeah, he makes it go.
And I think that was a coverage bust from what Polisic was saying on that big run.
You had a missed fit.
Excuse me.
Well, he didn't get touched, so he would have scored a two-hand touch. So, yeah, they busted a fit.
Where a dude in the secondary was just, you know, not where he needed to be.
Right.
So, hope, and the tackling just wasn't very good either. I didn't think.
Right. I mean, on that play, nobody had a chance to tackle him. But, yeah, right. Yes, I know what you mean. Not a great tackling day.
And I thought they handled McIver okay, I thought.
Yeah. My dude could not have gotten into the transfer portal faster.
How is he still old? He's like 25.
Hey, man, they're all 25. That's the portal. That's COVID. Just play till you're done. They're just giving my guy Parker Fox a hard time. He was at at Northern State at the same time as current NDSU defensive quality control coach, my guy Jared Taylor, and Parker Fox is still somehow playing. You know, Jared's been a coach for 2 years, and Parker Fox is still playing. College basketball. I don't think they'll let him play at Minnesota again. I do believe they're going to shut him down. He's the same high school class as Trey Young. Parker Fox was.
That is crazy.
We're not going to get out of Parker Fox. But, yeah, anyway. Maverick McIver. But I think somebody in the FBS with his, like, he was at Tech, then he carved up at Abilene. Like, there are definitely enough bad quarterbacks in the FBS that someone... I don't know if he'll get a bag, but like someone will want Maverick McIver as their QB.
Right, and he's in the area, right? There's a lot of schools in that area.
There's like 20 Division I schools in Texas, somebody was saying. It's insane. Yeah.
Houston, Tech, TCU, Baylor,
right.
SMU. I mean, like...
I think Maverick McIver can be an upgrade for somebody. I sincerely believe that. Losses for Mercer... Giving up 55 to Samford, which you don't love. They only have two losses, by the way, just like the Bison. And then getting just whacked by Alabama, but
whatever.
It's irrelevant, basically.
I think the Samford game, Sam Herder, I think, was talking about it somewhere. I was listening. Said they got a lot of opportunities off the turnovers. Samford did more than Mercer's defense just getting
cooked. Short fields and things of that nature.
Sure. I didn't look into it, but that's kind of the vibe I got. And if you read Dober's breakdown of it, he actually goes into a little bit better. What their stats are showing are not quite what...
Yeah, Ron's always got it under control. He does a great job.
So, yes, they're number one in the country in run defense, tackles for loss, their down defense. But, again, there's levels to it.
Right. So, there for sure are. Neubauer is one game in common, I guess, but they did beat ETSU 37-31, if you want to look at that.
Okay.
I think you look at ETSU and NDSU's game with a grain of salt sometimes, but hey, it's a common opponent, and it's the only one that they have. Neubauer now at quarterback, 57 total yards passing in the 17-10 win over Rhode Island. That is running the football.
Yes. 2.9 yards per attempt. FYI.
That's brutal, man.
Not good.
No. They gave up 31 or more points to Samford, Western Carolina, ETSU, and Alabama. So, again, you can talk about leading the nation in run defense, all those things. NDSU has a better offense than at least three of those teams. Probably not than Alabama. Ryan Williams not walking through that door at North Dakota State.
Yeah.
But... you give up 31 or 55 to Samford, but you give up 31 or more to Western Carolina and East Tennessee State. I've got questions about you defensively.
Yeah. Well, the Bison also gave up 35 to ETSU, so people will use that argument.
Sure, that's fine, but I mean it happened four times to Mercer.
Yeah, I don't think NDSU's given up 400 yards in a game since Colorado.
Yeah. Solid up front. PFF College loves interior defenders Arius Nash and edge Braden Manley. Gives very high marks to linebackers Isaac Dowling and Ken Stanley, which Manley was the DPOY. Zach was, what do you got here?
Freshman of the year.
Jacobs,
Their head coach was the coach of the year.
And McGee was the offensive player of the year.
So, yeah, they were a lot of honors. I mean,
this is the SoCon, yeah?
Yeah, this is the SoCon.
Okay.
I mean, it's not the Valley. It's not the Big Sky. But it is probably number three in terms of FCS conferences right now.
Because rest in peace, the CAA.
Rest in peace. Brad Jones, shout out. we had a nice long talk about that at the game last week of the CAA.
Yeah.
Not great it's up in the Northeast.
Yeah, it's over, unfortunately, for the CAA. TJ Moore, Miles Redding led the nation in interceptions with 7. It stands to reason, though, when we're talking about, you know, the two D linemen and the two linebackers really being like their strong suit. As we mentioned, they give up 2.3 yards per carry. You know, they're allowing fewer than 67 yards per game on the ground. They do give up more than 7 yards per pass attempt. And that's the interesting thing, right? Jake Rock's out for the year. Ponches on the... They've always put in Lewinsky. You think Rock is tall and skinny for a guard? Ponches tall and skinny for a guard. I don't know. Maybe you play Ponch at right tackle and you slide Mason Miller into right guard and they're just not talking about that. I'd be surprised if it wasn't Jack Lewinsky. But again, what do I know?
Yeah, that's...
The depth chart is what the depth chart is, man. Pontius is that's a tall guard. It's a tall guard.
Yeah. I mean, then you're also talking, though, like, because they mentioned moving Ponch out to tackle, but then you're moving Gray or Mason Miller in.
But Mason Miller has played some guard, and so has Gray.
I know. I just mean that they are both tall glasses of water on the outside.
Yeah.
But another one was Bo Johnson that Tim mentioned on Tuesday.
And he's like normal size. He's like 6'6". So he's tall for a guard, but he's not. I mean, Ponch might be 6'8".
I think he is.
He's a huge human being to be playing guard. And that guard's a leverage position. That would be interesting to me to see that. Attendance probably not going to be great. Wasn't great last week. As far as the game, to me, you know, will the Bison defend the run better and will the Bison throw to win? If Mercer really is that good defending the run and really is that defending the pass, you still got Rajah Braylon, Bryce Lance, Chris Harris, Joe Stuffel, and the best player in FCS football in Cam Miller. Maybe just throw it. I don't know. Will the Bison leave the time-tested playoff strategy of running the crap out of the football? I don't know.
Yeah, that's was that the 2014 semi where Tim was like
banging against the wall? Yeah,
like, run it again.
Yeah,
hey, gap power. Yeah, I don't know that they're not going to abandon the run, but
I don't think they will either. But I can see when you just look on paper, this throw the ball to beat these guys.
Yeah, they very well throw it 30 times.
Yeah,
at least, and I think Cam Miller would be okay with that.
All right, prediction time. I got a double up. I've got NDSU 34, Mercer 17. So exactly, obviously, twice their score. I don't think that covers what's going on in Nevada. I'm not really concerned about that, but that's where I've got this one pegged. It's 34-17 Bison. How about you?
Yeah, I think they moved the line from 18.5 to 22.5, something like that. I'm in a similar ballpark. I don't think they'll get to 40 just because their defense is good, but I'm going to take 35-14.
Okay. Thank you, Blake, the intern, so much for your time. Thank you guys for listening. Thank the good folks at Gateway Chevrolet. Have a fun and safe weekend, everybody, and go Bison.